Without you guys, the dancers going through this, I imagine, you know, there's such a purpose for everything. And without you guys going through that cleansing and that grounding and being able to release your prayers, you know, you wouldn't be as effective or as in the zone during this 4-day period, because you're also functioning on no food, no water, and you're carrying quite a load. When you're talking energetically, you know, speaking energetically, you're carrying quite a load for yourselves, for the people that you're praying on behalf of, and keeping the ceremony going, you know, fluid the way it's supposed to. It's a lot. So I imagine that going through the sweat lodge 2 times a day is incredibly important.
It is. It just like anything else, when you're either meditating, you're using different tools to help you focus, things of that nature. It's one of those things where it just gets you right in that zone and gives you, or at least in my case anyways, gives me that clarity of purpose. This is why I'm here, and this is part of helping me focus for that. And then you actually get to the ceremony itself where you're actually dancing, and you are so focused, and most of the time you're either staring at the tree, or literally you're staring at the sun during the dance.
During the 4 days, right? You know,
for those 4 days, right. Yes. You know, so in one form or another, you're looking up into the tree, and there's the best way I've heard it explained is when they pick the tree, they always pick a tree that has a fork in it. So there's two main branches in it. And then they put what they call an eagle's nest between these two branches. So it actually forms a triangle. And as you're dancing and you're looking up into the tree, and you're concentrating on your prayers and you're concentrating on what you're doing there and you're focusing, and it's a form of not just a mental but a spiritual meditation. You're focusing on this aperture that can actually transport you someplace else. For you can receive messages, you can get a vision, in which, whether it's for you, for somebody specific, you can share with the people, whatever the case may be, or transport you, as some people have described it, transport you out to the stars, and you can commune with star people, whatever the case may be. Or literally, if we're not staring at the tree through this aperture, you're literally staring at the sun. And the same thing, you can either get a vision, you get messages, things of that nature. And boys and girls, I don't suggest that you do this on your own, like at home, don't stare at the sun. People, you know, doctors will tell you that's not good for you.
I know.
but once you're in a ceremony, it's different. You sit there and you stare at this for sometimes hours on end, whatever. And it's a completely different experience. I can tell you that sometimes I have close friends and family that they've been to ceremonies with me as just to help and to support, not as dancers, but to help and support the whole thing. And I'll have them make fun of me going, wait, you do this for 4 days and you don't have an issue. And out here, you can't, like, you need your sunglasses or something. it's totally different. It's like, you know, yeah. If I were to go outside and try to do this stuff right now, not being in that sacred circle, not being in that sacred space, it ain't happening. I'm going to hurt myself. I tell you that right now.
Mm-mm. Like somebody call a doctor.
Right. But once you get in that space, it's completely different. And, but again, that's why we do all this preparation, the prayer ties, the little barrier that we put up around the circle to protect us, things of that nature. It's just amazing what people can do during a ceremony like this versus, you know, having to do, you know, something similar out here, in everyday life. Right. It's just not happen. Anybody who's really interested in getting some of the details on some of these ceremonies, a really good book is I think it's called Road to Sundance by Manny Two Feathers or something like that, where he describes some of the stuff that he's been through as well. But part of the dance in some cultures is giving an offering or giving a piece of yourself. And that comes in the form of what they call a flesh offering. Some people will come into the circle on a certain day and they're, you know, they've made their prayer ties and they put those in the tree. You know, you don't have to be a dancer to put, you know, to put prayer ties up. So some people come over with just a couple of them. Some people come over with a handful of a small string of them, whatever the case may be, because they need healing or a family member needs healing. And some people will do that. In addition to that, we'll say, hey, I really, really need this prayer answered. And the only thing that I can give that I truly, truly own is a piece of myself. And so they'll enter that circle and they'll have somebody there who literally basically with a like a scalpel and take just a tiny bit of flesh as an offering to get that prayer heard. With the dancers, they do this on a, some of them will do it on a different level. And when they offer a piece of themselves for that, they call it a piercing. And with that, and there's different ways that that's done, but basically you're giving of yourself. It's the only thing that I truly own. I don't own anything. I'm a caretaker or something. So I can say I own 20 some odd acres. Well, technically, no, I can't take it with me. I don't own it. I'm a caretaker of it. So the only thing I actually have any control over and the only thing I actually really do own is this host that I happen to be inhabiting right now for this human experience. And I'll give a little bit of that, because that's the only thing I really do own to get these prayers heard. So there's a point in the ceremony where you'll see individuals do that. They'll give a piece of themselves, whether it be what we call a flesh offering, or in the case of a dancer, a piercing, so that these prayers can be heard and answered.
So can I ask, as a dancer, when you give a flesh offering, which is the piercing, are you giving that for yourself and for your prayers to be answered? Or is this for the prayers of the community or someone from the community for their prayers to be answered?
It's for the community. It's for somebody else. So as a dancer, it's always for somebody else. If I have something personal, you know, for me, then I might go to a different ceremony other than the dance or whatever, where they'll say, hey, okay, well, if anybody feels the need to do flesh offerings or something for something, I'll go do that. And that I can, if I need it for me, okay, fine. But as a dancer in the circle, it's always for somebody else.
Gotcha.
That, you know, it's akin to a calling, kind of like to a priesthood. You don't do it for yourself. You do it for others. So in that circle, if that's what I'm going to do, it's always for others. That's what my purpose is there. It's for others. It's for the community. It's for an individual out there who needs it. And that's why I'll do it.
So is the piercing an actual piercing, like, you know, you got a piercing and you got an earring, or is it just like your flesh is pierced?
Okay. I guess the best way I can explain it, it is kind of like getting a piercing, you know, it goes in one way, comes out the other. You'll have to forgive me. I'm getting a little emotional right here. So I'm going to,
no, take your time.
The way in most of these cases, you have in most of these cases, you have like these wooden pegs you work on them as an individual. They're probably, I don't know, somewhere between like maybe 3 inches long or so. And what they'll do is they'll take that peg. They'll take a scalpel, and they'll make an incision depending on where you're getting the piercing, so that there's a through and through incision. So it goes depending on where it's going, so that basically this peg can be pushed in one side and come out the other. So you'll have a through and through, and then depending on how a lot of this is a lot of meditation and how you and the spirits are going to communicate and how you're going to do this. And there's different ways of doing it. Anybody who's ever like looked into kind of what the Sundance is, the popular or the more common thing that you see are individuals who've been pierced and they're attached to a rope. The piercing, the pegs are attached to a rope, and that rope is attached to the tree. And they're not really suspended from the tree, but there's tension on the rope that's pulling at you. And you do that for a while. And then once you're done, the only way to release that prayer and be done with that is to basically pull as hard as you can until the pegs actually just kind of rip the flesh. Wow. So that they're freed.
Oh my gosh.
In that instant, that prayer is released, and that goes out there like that. It goes out there to be heard and to be answered for whoever needed those prayers. And after that, what they'll do is they'll take the dancer, and what's left of the flesh that's kind of just hanging there will be cut away. And that is the actual offering that's given right there. But the in between, between the piercing and the cleaning of the wound, where if you're tied to the tree for let's just say, that period in between where you're pulling at the rope and there's tension there. There's a connection between the individual and something more, something out there. That struggle in between is where your prayer is being sent out there, and where you're actually, you're not just spiritually or mentally invested into this prayer, but you're physically invested into it because you're giving of yourself until you actually break free of it and release that prayer.
That is powerful. Have you done that kind of offering? Like,
yes,
you yourself as
a
dancer? Wow.
Yes.
That is something else. And I can't even imagine, I can't begin to imagine what that would feel like, or the emotions that are coursing through you when you're doing that, especially on behalf of somebody else. Because I don't really know that many people that I would do that for.
No, I've had some of these conversations with some friends and family members and stuff like that. I mean, physically, it's... For me personally, physically, when I'm going through the initial process, it's like I'm not even there. I'm aware of what's going on, and I know, like, certain people, I can feel their energy. So if certain people are standing by me, I know who it is and where they're at, and I'm aware of what's going on. But the actual what's physically happening to me at that point in time, it's like somewhere a part of me is checked out. So I know what's going on. I know it's happening, but I'm really not there for it. Depending on the type of piercing after that, will determine exactly where I am in the process. So if it's tied to the tree, yeah, I'm very aware of what's going on. I'm very aware of that. It's like being in two different places at the same time. I know what's going on here. I'm very aware of what's going on. Yet there's a space in there where I feel so connected to something more that as to somebody else looking from the outside, looking in, not understanding what's going on, this could look really brutal and gruesome. Being in that space, believe it or not, it's one of these things where, okay, does it have to end? And I know that might sound a little crazy, but it's such a connectedness that it's really hard to describe. But you get to a point, meditating and being in that moment and being in that prayer, that you're just in a completely different space. Because Lord knows outside of that, oh, no, you're crazy. There's no way in the world.
Hell no. That's very powerful. That's incredibly powerful. So if you do participate in the piercing of your own flesh, do you continue on to the rest of the ceremony? You do, right? Because they just cut away the flesh. That's the offering. And then, you know, you're patched up and you keep going.
Yeah, you know, once they take care of you and they finish that portion of it up, you go back to your spot and you go back to your place in line, whatever the case may be, and you just keep going. Keep going as if nothing happened.
Wow. That is a lot. So I know we're not done talking about the ceremony itself, but after going through those 4 days, and especially having done something like that where you do a flesh offering and tied to the tree or not, what are you feeling like after this is all said and done?
Oh my goodness. It's after everything is said and done. Oh, it's a very interesting space. It's coming back to like regular society, if you will, is kind of difficult. Everything is like too much. You know, you get done with the ceremony and it's just like, oh my goodness, you feel, or I feel anyways, I feel like 100 pounds lighter or whatever. It's almost a euphoric feeling. And it's like, you know, I'm sitting here going, sooner or later, I have to come back down to earth. I really rather not. You get to the end of the 4 days and it's personally, and my brain is sitting here going, please don't make me go back. This space right here is a good space. And it literally takes me about a week or two before I come back to reality, if you will. It's just, everything is just, I'm in this little bubble almost. And, it's just like, I go back to work, I'm sitting at my desk, or I have to go grocery shopping, and it's just, you know, this noise, it's just too much. It's just like, okay, I need my little space. And, you know, I need a separation from everything. So it's kind of like walking around in a little bubble almost for about a week or two afterwards. But it's this area where it's just like I said, it's a euphoric feeling, mm-hmm. at the end of the 4 days. And it gives you a different perspective on coming back to society. 'Cause it's almost like that, if I can stay here in this space, this is where reality really is. And going back into society is like, I not have to pretend to be one of them, if you will.
Is it kind of like the Matrix?
You know, right. Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
That's it's what like it kind of sounds like. Yeah. There's like the reality and then there's the pretend world that's all fabricated and.
Exactly. And that's a wonderful way of describing it. It's like this over here. It seems real and everything, but there's just something off about it. It's just not quite there.
Mm-hmm.
And being in this space over here after 4 days is this is where I belong. Absolutely.
Do you find the transition to be easier or harder with each ceremony that you do?
In a way, I kind of find it easier, basically because in some ways, it's like I don't come all the way back. So each time I go through something like this, it's like I can keep one foot on this side of reality, and more I can keep another foot in the other side of reality. It's like one foot in the spirit world, one foot in this world. And the more I do it, it's a better foothold in each. But again, it's like, do I really have to come back to this other one?
Right.
Type thing. But no, it's being able to keep one foot in one world and one foot in another world so that I can still function the way society expects me to. But still be able to be in this other space when I need to. And that's becoming a more and more prominent thing for me personally.
So with all of these experiences, becoming a dancer, so how long have you been a Sun Dancer?
I actual dancing 8 years.
Wow. So two cycles.
Yes.
4 year cycles. Interesting. And what was the draw for you? Like, what was the process? I know we've talked before about you finding out about your lineage, and did that have anything to do with your call to join this community, or was it something else?
No, the draw for me, as far as the family lineage, has always been there. It's always been a very tremendous pull for me. It's not something that we learned growing up. Grew up in a very strict Catholic family. Even though we had this on this side here, as I'd mentioned before, it was very much the Catholic influence. So things like this really weren't things that we discussed. But we still had all this other stuff happening in the family. My mother being very intuitive and everything. My grandmother, you know, things of that nature. So this whole thing was always a very big pull. And as I got older and got to a point in my life where, you know, I need to do something or I'm going to come out of my skin. There's just something that's missing, something that's, you know, there's a piece here that I need to find. And so when I decided to go that direction, when I decided to look into that, what the family lineage and stuff was, that kind of thing started falling into place. It's like something like little gears clicking into place and then they start moving and things kind of progressed from there. Not actually having a community that from the people where my family comes from, not having that kind of community near me, then I gravitated to the next thing, one of the local communities. And eventually I found myself in a community as a member of a community, helping them out, learning some of their ways, and in a roundabout way, learning, going back to my own roots and learning where my family came from. Because again, as I mentioned earlier, different tribes throughout North America shared their culture and experiences. And so learning about and learning about and the customs of some of these Plains Indians, that actually led me back to my roots, actually, because some of the ceremonies that they do were actually gifted to them from my ancestors. So, in a roundabout way, I started learning about where I came from somebody else, because they learned some of their ceremonies from my ancestors when they started sharing their cultures together. And one culture gifted this ceremony to them, and they gifted that ceremony to them, and here we are. So, while most of the stuff that I've been taught and practice comes from the Plains Indians, I have done ceremonies and started learning more about where my family and my culture comes from down in Mexico, by participating in some of the other ceremonies and then running into people there that are from that area, and they're like, "Oh, no, I know exactly where who your people are. Your people are so and so, and this is what they do." And so, like I said, in a roundabout way, I wind up finding out more about my culture from these other communities because of that sharing of culture and knowledge that we were talking about earlier.
That's so amazing. That is incredible. Good Lord. So, how many ceremonies would you say you do per year?
Oh gosh, that's hard to say. The main big one, like the Sundance, we do once a year. That's a once a year thing. And at the moment, I'm doing one up in North Dakota, which is slightly different than the one that I was originally taught. But their Sundance up there is a melding of a couple of different cultures. So that's it's a good ceremony. It's a nice one. And we do sweat lodges, so yes, I'll do sweat lodges. So we can do more. Those you can do anytime you need to. So I'll do several of those. As a matter of fact, we just a month ago built one right back here behind the house. So
A
now we
sweat
have,
lodge?
yeah, we yes, we went ahead and we went ahead, prepped everything, and got that going, and we put up a sweat lodge of our own. So it's right here behind the house. So anytime we need to do a sweat lodge, we have it right here, and we're ready to go. So we'll do that one several times. We'll do, if we need to, we'll do a small little pipe ceremony so we can send out prayers. So when you say ceremony, it could be just about any. I mean, it could be simple as sitting down and just smoking the pipe so that we can send out prayers, or we could be sitting around in a circle just singing the songs, the different ceremony songs. That in and of itself is a small little ceremony. You come together and you sing the songs. So it's not always like the big things. It's not like the big dance. Which is once a year. It could be the sweat lodge. It could be coming together to smoke chinupa so that we can send out prayers. There are other ceremonies as well, medicine ceremonies and things of that nature. Other ceremonies where specifically where you call in spirits to help you. So how many a year? That's hard to say, because it's a constant thing. Not just one particular thing.
Good Lord. So between all the ceremonies, and I know they're not all Sundance, it's so many different forms of ceremonies. Do you find that you need a specific amount of time between each one? And I know that's kind of a loaded question because it really depends on the purpose of the ceremony and what's being done. But if you happen to do similar ceremonies in close proximity to each other, time-wise, how much time do you typically need between each one to kind of decompress and get back to it?
It depends on what the ceremony is. Like I said, the Sundance, it takes me about a week or two to come back down to reality, if you will. Some of these other ones, it depends. I mean, there have been times where we've spent like 3 or 4 months where every weekend we were doing a sweat lodge. And during that time period, it was so energizing. It was just like, okay, another one, let's go. Okay. And it just kind of feeds you. And it's like every time we did one, it was just feeding on top of the previous one. And it was amazing. We've done the 1 year, and I think this is the, I think this was the second year that I danced. I did my vision quest, which was a four day thing. And in that you go like 4 days, no food and water, and you've got your little area and you do your thing for 4 days. And then it was, I think a week and a half later, something to that effect, or 2 weeks later at the most, that we did Sundance. So that was the 4 days of purification and then the 4 days of the dance. And that was right after I had already had my vision quest. And then I think it was after that, it was probably not even a month later, we went to another Sundance someplace else where we had been invited. And I danced up there. That experience took a lot out of me. I will not be doing that ever again. That one I probably should have taken some more time in between a couple of things. The experiences I got from that and some of the stuff that that I saw during all of those ceremonies so close together are still carrying me today. That's information that I'm still using today on my journey. So, again, it kind of depends on the ceremony itself. I find nowadays that, again, it's kind of having like 1 foot in one world and 1 foot in the other. So it's not such a big transition. So like prep time in between really isn't that big of a thing. Other than the time it takes me to kind of come down to reality after Sundance. Cause like I said, that's the 4 days of that one is very intense and extremely emotional. So it takes a little bit. So other than that, some of the stuff just kind of personally kind of just feeds me and keeps me going.
Yeah. I can definitely
just
see that.
Lot of energy. Yeah. It's just a lot of energy and it just kind of just, it's almost like metaphysical fuel. It just keeps me going.
So do you remember what it was like as an onlooker and as a dancer to be part of your very first ceremony? So the very first time you were ever present for a Sundance ceremony as an onlooker, as part of the crowd, what was that like? And then as the dancer being in that sacred ritual, like I can only imagine how like magical that must feel and how, I know it's about other people, but it just has to feel so intense in like the best way.
Yeah, and it's funny that you asked that question because a lot of the individuals that I was doing like sweat lodge ceremonies, for example, a lot of them were sun dancers. So I had been doing sweat lodges and the Chinooka ceremonies and things of that nature, medicine ceremonies. But I had never actually been to a Sundance ceremony. I'd never actually seen one. I'd heard of them. I knew what they were. I knew the basic mechanics of how the ritual was set up and what they did and things of that nature. But I'd actually never been to one myself. One thing or another always precluded me from going to observe or help or support. For several years, unfortunately, it was my job. I couldn't take the time off during that portion of the year to go. So the first time I had ever gone to a Sundance was the first year I danced.
That's a plot twist.
that was an interesting year. That was.
So you got it all at once, like the whole shebang.
Yeah, I it was pretty much the crash course. This is, you know, welcome aboard. Here you go. Let's and hit the ground running, pretty much. Yeah, because the first time I'd actually ever been to a Sundance was the first year that I actually danced.
Cool. So I don't know what the heck I'm in for.
You know, and talking, you know, and as I said earlier, some of these folks, they spend 4 years as a helper of some kind, doing one thing, and then maybe move up to the next thing for a couple of years before they even dance. And it was one of those things where it was always there. It was something that I talked a lot to several people about and the like. And when it finally came around, and I finally found a teacher that I was comfortable with, because it had been brought up to me before. Yes, you need a teacher, you need a mentor, somebody who will teach you the ways of doing this, and who will basically be responsible for you during the dance. Because there's a bit that goes into this, and it's not, you volunteer and, you know, you go through this process to discern whether you need to be in there. But on top of this, once you're in there, it's not like, okay, you're ready, here you go. You actually have to have a teacher or a mentor to get you through this and to be with you during the initial process. And once you've finished your first cycle, then you're on your own. At that point, you are on your own as a dancer. If you continue to dance after that, you know, that's on you, and basically you're responsible for yourself. But for your first cycle or for your first 4 years, you have somebody that's responsible for you. They're looking after you. They're teaching you, making sure that you know the ways to do this, you know, the customs and the culture, not only for that, but kind of help you process through this stuff too. So if you get a vision, if you have things that come to you or whatever, that you can talk to somebody about this and they work you through it. Not unlike when you'd go through Reiki and you go through the different Reiki levels, and your teacher will help you, guide you through that process. Well, it's the same way. You have somebody to guide you through that process during your first cycle. So when I finally found somebody that I'm like, yes, this person is somebody that I can trust, or this, you know, something just clicks that this person is the individual that I can trust to teach me these things and carry me through this, if need be. So when I finally found that individual and asked for this, everything kind of like was put into warp speed after that. And so it was quite the experience.
I can only imagine. My God. So in all the time you've been doing this, which now you've been doing it for two cycles, which is 8 years, how do you feel this has changed you? And it's, you know, in the energetically in the spiritual world and energetically in the matrix, if you will, like, what changes have you seen in yourself and how you see things and how you respond to things and how you lead your spiritual life and how you take care of yourself energetically? And I mean, the gamut, like, what are the changes you've seen?
A lot of the changes that I've seen is besides a spiritual growth, I think one of the biggest things is how I perceive interactions with people and relationships. There's such a deeper connection than what we as a society see between individuals, not just between people as well, but as you said earlier, excuse me, that, you know, everything is living, even an inanimate object has some sort of energy to it, and how it's all connected. Being able to see that and interact with that has opened my eyes to a lot of things, especially with how we interact in relationships between people, you know, and just living things in general. The other part of it too is there's a lot, you know, when we talked about acknowledging some of these gifts and some of these abilities early on, you know, younger, I'm like, you know what? I don't want to deal with this. This is not my thing. You know, I don't want to be looked like I'm crazy and this, you know, this isn't going to work. Until I realized that, no, I better acknowledge this, because if I don't, I might be doing myself more harm than good. So you get to a point where you start acknowledging spirits, things of that nature. And when you first start out like this, I know I've heard you joke on a couple of your podcasts about, you know, you see spirits and things of that nature, and you're like, yeah, why are you here? Why are you in my space? You know, it's a little startling.
Right.
But the fact that I do this and I've done it for a while now, and realizing that I'm asking them to show up every time I do something, every time I do a sweat lodge or something like that, I'm literally asking them to come. I mean, I'm putting out little spirit robes for them to, you know, inhabit for a little bit so they can interact with me. So this whole like startle effect when they actually do show up, I'm expecting it now. I mean, it's not that it doesn't startle me at times, because I'm like, there are times when I'm like, I didn't call for anybody. Okay. I wasn't expecting to see you here, type of thing. But I'm more comfortable in that space right now than I have ever been. But that's, again, doing this and going through these ceremonies and everything. It's a conscious effort. It's a deliberate thing. You know, I'm asking for them to show up. So how I perceive things around me and how I perceive the matrix, if you will. I'm in a place right now that when I interact with people, on just a human level, like just a basic person level, I think it's made me a better grounded individual to kind of understand where people come from. I'm a little bit more tolerant of people, if you will, because I understand that there's this huge disconnect between this energetic being that we are and the society that we live in. And if I can see the struggle that a person is having because of a disconnect, I can be a little bit more of an understanding person. And that's been, I think, the biggest change for me. When you're younger, you kind of look at things in an idealistic sense where, you know, okay, this is black and this is white, you know, this is the way things should be. And now I got to the point where, no, there's this society that we live in. There's this everyday world that we have to live in. And then there's a spiritual world, and in a lot of people that is very disconnected. And this is where dis-ease comes from. So it may not be a medical illness, but people have these struggles because they're separated from who they really are. And that's a spiritual being. They're just, you know, we're in a society that doesn't allow us to be a spiritual being. It kind of like, it detracts from that. It distracts you from that.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
So the biggest change for me is that I can actually kind of, I can understand that now, and kind of see where people are coming from. So it's changed my mode of thinking and my way of looking at people and how people interact with each other because of that. Doesn't mean that, you know, I'm the most patient of people at times, because I'm still human, and I still like going, why, you know, can't you just get with the program? But then again, I can take that step back now and be like, okay, well, it is what it is. And this is why it is. And, The way I react to a lot of things nowadays has changed drastically because of that.
And that's a cool journey to see and, you know, to notice in yourself. And, you know, I think we're living in a time that is, it's a really cool time because it's far more acceptable now to be your real magical self. And it's far more acceptable to talk about things like the energy work that you do and the healing work and meditation and Sundance ceremonies and all of these things are far more accepted now than they have been in years past. They're not so taboo anymore. They're not so woo-woo. They're, you know, now it's cool to think about your self-care, and it's cool to, you know, take care of your mind, body, and soul with meditation and with clean food and with, you know, because it's all connected. So now it's like the end thing, which is so funny. But honestly, at the same time, I'm like, I don't really care what makes it cool. Like the fact that people are thinking about it and are conscious about it and they're aware and they are curious and want to know a little bit more, I think is awesome. So in whatever capacity, yeah, however it comes, let it come.
And it is. And I have to chuckle sometimes because sometimes I could either I could be in the office. I could be out someplace else shopping or like at a restaurant. And it's funny because sometimes people will walk up and go, I've had this happen before. I was at a restaurant. We were traveling. We were having dinner at a Denny's in Nevada. And this gal who was our server, you go to a restaurant and you start up a nice little chat with the staff there, and you know, polite and you know, going back and forth. So we'd had this little conversation. The gal was all smiles and everything. We were having a good time. And later she came back. You know, we were halfway through our meal, and she just kind of looked at us. And she looked at me and she's like, "Can I ask you just a really, really strange question?" I'm like, "Okay." She's like, "Have you ever heard of Reiki?"
Have I? I'm queen,
yeah,
Reiki
and
girl.
I'm sitting there, you know, and we're sitting around, there's four of us at the table, and we're like looking at each other. And I'm like, "Yes, I have heard of Reiki." And she's like, "Okay." And then all of a sudden she's got this smile on her face, and it's like there's this like this anticipation or something. And she's like, "I've got this sense from you." And she's like, you know, she asked me, you know, "Hey, are you Reiki trained? You know, do you do Reiki, this, that, and the other?" And I'm like, "Yes, I do." And she's like, "Oh, good, good, good." She's like, I need to ask you something. I'll be right back." And she left, disappeared for a little bit, came back, and she came back with this crystal thing. It was like an amalgamation of a couple of different stones or something. And she's like, "Do you know about stones?" And I'm sitting here thinking, "Oh goodness, yes, I do." you know, but it's funny because the longer I do this, the more I run into this thing. And it could be at the office where somebody was like, Do you know about chakras?" "Yes, I do." "Yeah." And then we'll ask me random questions. And I'm like, "You know, we barely know each other's names because you work in IT and, you know, I'm sitting over here in a cubicle at the other end of the building. And now you're asking me about, you know, mm-hmm. chakras and what's a good stone to heal this, that, and the other." And so, yes, the fact that it's more accepted and people are willing to leave their little comfort zone and talk about it is amazing, because the fact that people can be that comfortable with it and put it out there and not be afraid that somebody's going to look down on them so that they can actually freely express themselves. Because this, when you can express yourself freely like that, sometimes you just need to be pointed in the right direction, or you need that next little, that positive push to steer you in the right direction. And you can't get that unless you can freely talk to somebody about it. So the fact that we can is just amazing. Agreed. It's very liberating. it, you know, it's liberating, and in a lot of ways, it makes it a lot safer, if you will, to practice this stuff.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, I agree.
Because, you know, if you can ask these questions, then you're not going to go out and do something foolish because you're too afraid to get the right direction or the warning that says, hey, don't do that or don't touch that. You know, mm-hmm. either that's something that shouldn't be messed with, like Ouija boards. until you learn how to do this correctly, this is probably not something you want to start out with. Let's start out with this over here and we'll work right. our way up.
Yes. Don't start dabbling. Don't just stare into the sun, guys.
Right. So the fact that we can talk about this freely and people are is wonderful. It's amazing. So and it makes it easier for those individuals who are trying to learn some of this stuff and trying to find their way to keep them from getting lost or to keep them from doing something foolish.
It's true. It's true. And there's so many friends to our show that just contact me and talk about you know, they are prepping for their first Reiki session or they, you know, their experience at their first session or going through metaphysical courses or like, it's so cool to hear this and that people want to share it so freely and that they are super comfortable sharing it with me. It just like, it lights me up. It makes me super happy because, you know, I know even them having an outlet and having someone to tell and ask questions, someone that they can ask questions of and to, and you know, whatever the case, it's still super confusing. And I'm so happy that people are talking about it and do have a place where they can ask questions. There are so many blogs and forums and teachers that are open about it. And it's just, it's nice because you don't have to dabble anymore. You don't have to do it in secret. Right. You don't, you know, like we're not, you know, I don't know, depending on where you're from, I don't know, but for the most part, we're not going to have, you know, what is it called? I lost my train of thought, but the Salem witch trials, you know, like we're not going to have people being lynched over this stuff anymore for the most part, because right. it's not, you know, it's not open everywhere.
And it's
unfortunate, but it's, you know, we're making progress, really good progress all around in all arenas. So I think it's super cool in that, you know, people like you are super free and are willing to talk about this and Sophie coming on and talking about things. And it's super exciting because I know so many people have questions and that was the whole purpose of starting this specific podcast was, you know, to answer those questions. And I'm learning with everybody and I love having you guys on when you get to teach us things like this. And, you know, I ordinarily wouldn't have known about this or, you know, maybe over the course of doing my own research would have found information, but to actually speak to someone that has firsthand information and firsthand experience is such a different ball game. And it's priceless.
And I'm loving Sophie, by the way. I want to meet that woman.
I know. She is the best. You can't have her. She's mine. I love Sophie. And like that she's down to do this stuff. I just, you know, doing the two episodes at her mom's house and doing the two at her shop. Like it's so cool. And she's also just ride or die. And she's like, hey, let's do this. And I'm like, okay, that scares the crap out of me, but let's do it. So, but I know with her, like I'm in very good hands and, you know, but for both of you to just come on and share your experiences and to teach and be so free with it is just, it's incredible. And I could not be more honored if I tried. Like it just is so meaningful and I am excited to hear what everyone has to say because they will respond in the most amazing ways and let me know what they thought. And it's always super positive, which I appreciate that from our little family. But it's exciting. It's super exciting. And I love that you came on and shared this and that you went into so much detail with the actual ceremony and your own experiences. And it's magical to say the least. It is so magical. So of all the years that you've been doing this, are there any experiences that stand out the most to you being part of these ceremonies? Like any lives that you've seen change as a result of these ceremonies or, you know, the prayers that have been sent up or just a cool experience that you're like, dang, I'll never forget that.
Oh gosh. I've seen so many people like with their lives change and things going in better directions for them and things of that nature. It's just amazing. Any particular experiences? Oh my goodness. There are so many. That's a hard one because there's as far as personal experiences, there's quite a few. Each one has been such a learning experience. And it just continues.
Which is typically how it goes. It is hard to pinpoint and say, oh, this was so cool and stood out, or because it does all tie together. So I know it's a loaded question, but overall, right. I mean, I know what we can take away is that it's been so magical, and the growth for you personally has been, I mean, I don't even know that you can really even put it into words.
Right. I think the one thing that comes to mind right now is the one ceremony I was doing, and this one, without going into too much detail, I found myself in a different place, and I'll go ahead and just it's like having this vision, but it's also like being transported someplace else. And I found myself someplace else in what I would describe like almost like a giant's lodge type of thing. And you know, like the lodges are these half dome structures. So I found myself in a very large version of one of these, and it was pitch black in there. And what I do remember is hearing voices somewhere off in the distance, and I couldn't quite make them out, and I couldn't make out what they were saying for sure, but I could hear voices in the distance. And the longer I stood there in that space and waited to see who or what came to me, after a while, I saw a line of people standing at the other end of this lodge structure, several of them, and they're just basically shoulder to shoulder, and they're facing my direction. And as I said, it was really dark in there, and these individuals or these beings were glowing. They had a faint glow to them, and that's the only reason I could see them. And the longer I stood there, and I just started going into like my prayers and trying to understand what was going on and trying to pay attention so that whatever was being shown to me or whatever was, you know, whatever message was trying to be communicated, that I would be receptive to it. But basically what I got when I listened, I realized that they weren't like talking, they were singing. And the more I listened to that, that they were singing, and they were singing some of these old songs, from what I understood of it, and that they were in this lodge with me, and they were singing. So I started singing with them, and wound up seeing, it was weird because by the time I started singing with them and everything, and the luminescent beings that they were, they started getting a little brighter, and I can make more of them out. And once I could see that, I could see that there was more of them, and it was kind of like they were rows of people behind rows of people. So it was more than one row. And as I looked up and around me into this lodge structure, it's like the top of the lodge structure just opened up, and I could see these different constellations and these bright stars in the sky. But they were through openings in the structure. And I hung out for a while there with these beings, just singing with them. And that was probably the beginning of a portion of this journey for me in carrying on some of the traditional songs and things of that nature when it comes to certain ceremonies. And I have seen some of these individuals since then when I help out with certain ceremonies in the same region where I was at when this happened. And so every so often I'll see them like walking through the woods or standing off in the distance in the woods when I'm getting ready to do something. And I'm like, oh, there you are. Okay. So, all right, here we go. You're here to help me out. So let's do this. There's so many different experiences and stuff like that, but that's one of the ones that kind of sticks with me. Cause that's one of the first ones where I'm like, I normally don't see things. I feel things. Sometimes I hear things, never really quite clearly, but it's one of those things where I feel them. So there's somebody nearby. I know there's somebody there. I don't see them. It's not like I can hear them. But that was the first time I really saw them. So that one kind of sticks there because of that. So, yeah.
That's amazing. Oh my God. So they're part of your team, right? Part of your squad. Like they're there for you specifically.
There's one that is specific. She's normally around when I'm doing, especially with the Sundance, she's normally around. When I'm helping with, or when I used to help with the vision quests on a regular basis, she was always somewhere in the background. She was always somewhere not too far from me. The other ones, I wouldn't call them part of my team. I think they were just kind of the beginnings of some of the ancestors letting me know that, okay, we know you're here and we're here for you and you're not alone.
Amazing. And so, they have a way, they'll find a way of communicating with you and showing themselves and in whatever form they feel necessary. And I always think it's so cool when they choose to do that. They're like, hey, what's up?
Yeah. And nowadays I'm starting, excuse me. I don't see them very clearly. I can tell that they're there. Sometimes I can see them out of the corner of my eye, but lately they've been, literally a little bit more in my face. I know the other, like about a week or so ago, I had one stop me in the kitchen area. I'm getting ready to turn on the light. And the next thing I know, there's somebody standing right in front of me. And for a split second, I could see them right standing right there. And I'm like, okay, sure. Cool. Okay. So right now they're starting to make themselves, I shouldn't say they're starting to make themselves more visible to me. I think I'm just getting to the point where in my journey that I'm a bit, that I'm willing to see them now and interact with them more directly.
That's a great way to put it. That's a really great way to put it. Because it's true. I think it's a two-sided thing. It's the way they choose to present, you know, when and how and all that good stuff. And then your willingness and readiness to accept that.
Right. Exactly. It is a two-way street. And like I said, nowadays, when I do these things, you know, I am very conscious. Yes, I am asking them to show up. So it would be rude of me to say, hey, come on over. We're having this. we're having this gig and we want you to be here, but please stay in the corner where I don't have to see you.
It'd be
That's
rude.
Kind of rude.
Rude.
So... Right?
That's hilarious.
Invite the guests to stick them in the corner so you don't have to look at them. No, you know, so I've gotten to a point in my journey that, yes, I'm sitting here and I'm inviting them. So if I'm inviting them, then I need to be willing to interact with them. So that I have to be willing to get past my little comfort zone and see them and interact with them.
That's amazing. Well said. Okay. I like that a lot. Well, Lori, this has been so incredible. It's so much more than I had even remotely imagined we'd be able to talk about and get to. And I am like, I don't even know what to say. I want to have you on all the time because this is just, it's just so much fun. It's so much fun. Like the two episodes that we did in the past with your ghost story and the yeah. background story, like it was so cool. So I knew going into this that it was going to be a lot of unexpected stuff, but so much incredible information. And I'm so happy that we got to sync up our schedules and do this together. And I know it's going to be so well received because you're just amazing.
Oh, so why, thank you.
Now we just have to come up with another topic so we can have you on again tomorrow.
I enjoy listening to your podcast because, you know, information that we can get, that you can get out there like that, can help somebody. And yes, that's pretty cool. And as I said, you know, I had to sit there and discern some of this for myself, because as you asked earlier about people willing to share some of this information, and a lot of it is very secretive for good reasons. Right. I mean, there was a reason for it at one point in time. So I kind of had to discern whether, you know, this was a thing to do or not. And, you know, it got to the point where I was like, you know, yeah, we treat it in a good way. We treat it with respect and get the information out there. And, you know, hopefully this will reach somebody that it'll do them the good that they need. And so, yes, most definitely. So, yeah, this is a great undertaking. You know, like I said, this is great for those individuals that listen to your podcast. I think it's something that's wonderful and it's needed. And, yeah, I'm, you know me, shoot, let's jump in the car. We'll go do something crazy. I'm there with you.
I know. Well, I am so grateful. Thank you so, so much for your time. Thank you for doing this with us, for being so open and honest and forthcoming with all of your experiences, your information and knowledge and wisdom and all that good stuff. And this is definitely not the last time we're going to be together on an episode. So you guys stay tuned, because there will be so much more of Lori, because I'm going to trick her into being here all the time. I know, no trickery needed.
Girl, you don't have to go that far.
I know. I'll be like, Lori, come on, and she'll do it. So until next time, you guys, we will be back with Lori. I hope you guys enjoy this two-part series and that it is as magical for you to hear as it was for me. So if you guys have any questions, make sure you reach out. Let me know. And if it's something that I can't answer, which if it comes to Sundance, I definitely can't answer it. So I will be sure to go to the Reiki queen herself and the Sundance queen and get the info and get it back to you. So until next time, guys, wish Lori well. We love her.